Hi, John.
Hi, Tony. How are you doing?
Good, good. So you just got back from someplace in Alaska, right?
Yeah. And you just got back from Papua New Guinea a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah, an entire month there.
Yeah, I was up in Alaska for almost a month, so that was a pretty long trip for me, too.
How'd it go?
You know, it was like typical Alaska. I love and hate it up there. I just absolutely enamored with the beauty, the scenic beauty and the wildlife up there. But boy, does some of the bad weather just bring out the worst in me sometimes. So
did you have a lot of rain or
no, you know, happened? Honestly, I didn't. But what happened was I started the trip out. I flew up to Anchorage with my father, who also lives here in Washington. And we took my boat out on Prince William Sound for the first week. And we actually started the trip with probably the worst weather of the whole trip. I wanted to photograph like wildflowers in the fjords with like beautiful epic light at sunrise and sunset. Right. And so instead, the first couple of days we were motored way down to this place south of Whittier called the Chenega Glacier. Mm-hmm. Anchored up, it got poured on in the rain, clouds. And I motored around in those cloudy days looking for wildflowers like everywhere, you know, 10, 20 miles. And I didn't see any flowers. So I was really disappointed and frustrated.
I bet.
But, you know, I took advantage of what was there. And this Chenega Glacier is actually one of the most impressive glaciers that I've seen. And that's a tidewater glacier.
What does that mean?
Tidewater glaciers are the glaciers that are coming out of the mountains down into the fjords, and their terminal face is in the water. And so a lot of these glaciers up in Alaska are starting to back out of the water, and they've hit the edge of where the water is, and now they're starting to work their way uphill. But some of these are still in the water, and the ones that are in the water are doing these amazing things sometimes where the ice is collapsing. And I had this just amazing couple of days with this huge glacier and the cloudy weather with just this ice collapsing. And the Chenega Glacier probably has a good, you know, 500 to 1,000 foot face in places. And so sometimes this ice was falling from 1,000 feet up in the air straight down into the water and causing these huge explosions. And meanwhile, I'm in my little 12 foot inflatable. And, you know, I'm only a couple hundred yards back or so from the face, and just all this ice coming down and the seagulls taking off. I mean, it was just absolutely amazing. But then, of course, I'd spend hours waiting for any type of glacier activity again. So, you know, it was really impressive. And unfortunately, my dad's best experience from this, I shouldn't say his best experience, his most memorable moment from the trip is he gets to be the first person that I've actually lost overboard in
no
Alaska.
What
and
happened?
What happened was we were going up to this this rocky island that I wanted to get out on so that I could climb up and then be able to take some pictures with my tripod and camera set up. And sure enough, something fell and enough of a pulse of water happened that I didn't notice it until the last second when my dad was motoring the boat up to this rock. And he motored it into this little thing, put the bow in there, and then the water dropped 5 feet on us with this pulse of water. And all of a sudden, my dad, who was in the back of the boat, he flipped into the water, and I'm standing in the bow of the boat trying to keep the whole boat from flipping and like $30,000 worth of camera equipment to go in the water. And somehow I managed to keep the boat from flipping all the way over. With the next pulse of water that came in, I pushed off, and now my dad's holding on to the back of the boat. And then I was about to yank him out of the water, and then he had the foresight to say, hey, put away your cameras so I don't get it wet when I get in the boat. So I left him in there for a good 30-40 seconds and then pulled him out. And you know, I asked him, I said, you know, would you have been able to get out of the water without me lifting you out, you know, with all the clothing that we had on and the boots and everything? And he said he didn't think he would have been able to get himself out. So that was just real interesting. But, you know, never a dull moment. So,
yeah,
and that was only
my
first week up there. So,
wow. Well, look, fortunately, nothing bad happened to
you. Nothing bad happened at all. So, you know, I told him he's not allowed to go swimming again without permission. So, and, you know, it's
Sorry,
fun, though,
I shouldn't
being
laugh,
able to
but...
to share some experiences like that with my dad. You know, he's 72 now. He's been to Alaska with me 4 times in the last, you know, 7-8 years, and had a couple of different experiences. So that's that's another one for him. But you know,
That's one he won't forget. That's for
sure. That's right. You know, he didn't want to tell my mom while we were up there. I have a satellite phone, and we're like, no, we're not going to tell her. But you know, then I heard when he got back home that he was telling everybody, oh, I fell in the water in Alaska. So
he's very proud of you.
He was. Knocked
him out of the boat.
And you know, since I'm on it, I mean, I'll ask you a couple of things about your trip to New Guinea here in a second. Sure. But you know, I also, the week after I was out with my dad, I had a professional photography permit to visit Denali National Park.
Yeah, I saw you tweeting about that.
Yeah, what that allowed me to do is, you know, people from all over the world come to Denali National Park to take the buses and drive back to Wonder Lake and hope that they get to see Mount McKinley on a clear day. And, you know, they see bears from a quarter mile or a half mile away. And, you know, it's all good fun. But, you know, it's a different thing when we're after the pictures that we're trying to get. Mm-hmm. And with this professional photography permit, I'm able to use my own vehicle to drive the Wonder Lake Road. Mm-hmm. And it was really interesting how different the park was. You know, mind you, this is Alaska in the first week of June, so the sun barely sets. So I was taking pictures from 6 o'clock at night until 6 in the morning most nights, with only the sun being down for an hour or two at like 1 or 2 in the morning.
So, and is that like having golden hour for 12 hours?
Yeah, it was kind of like having golden hour from like 7 till 11:30, and then again from like 3:30 to about 7 in the morning.
Mm.
So real long, prolonged day, angle of light that was really beautiful to photograph. But what was really most interesting to us was during the day, I mean, we were sleeping a bit during the day, but with those buses going back and forth, the bears and the wolves were all, like I said, way the other side of the valleys, you know, like a mile away. You could see them with binoculars. You could see them when you zoomed in on your with my telephoto lens, but not in a photo.
Right.
And about 8:30 was when the last bus came through. And then there was nobody else driving those roads again until the next bus started at like 6 or 7 in the morning.
Right.
And so my friend and I, we had a this friend of mine from Anchorage has a Volkswagen van, so we were able to camp in that and drive this around. And from 8 until 6 in the morning, we had this park all to ourselves, and all of a sudden all the critters were like approachable. And
nice.
It was really just a whole different experience at that time of day to be back there in this much more like quiet and pristine you know, state of the park. And unfortunately, we saw wolves up close next to the car every night, but they kept making their appearances like after the sun had set. So it was like between 11:30 at night and like 4 in the morning, we even had wolves like on the bumper of the car. I mean, they wouldn't get out of the way of the road when we were trying to drive from one place to another. But, you know, no pictures were really usable at that time because it was too dark. But, you know, still just amazing to have like a wolf right there at the side of the road staring at you for like 30 minutes.
Yeah, it must have been.
And, you know, certainly I had a couple of really interesting encounters with like flowers and, you know, saw some bears. But another day or so here, I'm actually going to be sharing this picture of a lynx that I photographed as we were leaving the park. I had a wild lynx crossed in front of us in the road, and it ended up laying down in some bushes right next to the road and watching me for about 15 minutes.
Oh, very cool.
And with my 500 millimeter lens, I mean, at first I didn't want to get out of the car, and then we saw that it was comfortable, and I got out of the car to try to get a better angle so these bushes weren't blocking its eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, eventually it didn't mind. I was only about 20 feet away from it and laying on the ground on my stomach with my big lens trying to get this nice portrait that I was able to take. So pretty amazing experience. So,
is that your favorite image from the excursion?
Yeah, that one. And then I also posted a picture today that was a beautiful sunset where the third week that I went out, I finally actually got the wildflowers. And I took my boat back out one more week and I had the flowers and I had some beautiful light in Prince William Sound that week. So it was kind of real nice, kind of 3 different trips, and they all got better and the light got better and the weather got better. So you know, pretty amazing for a whole month up there.
Well, that sounds good.
Yeah,
sounds
good. Can't wait to see incredible. The
links. Yeah.
So why don't you go ahead and tell me a little bit about your New Guinea trip that I only saw you a little bit online talking about it, and I haven't seen any photos really yet. So.
Yeah. Well, I posted as much as I could from the boat, but it was kind of hard because we were always offshore.
Mm-hmm.
They do finally have these you know, those mobile internet little dongles that you stick on your laptop. So from time to time, I was able to get an internet connection, but it was slow no matter what. And we had a month of rain.
Wow.
And an entire, I think we had maybe a grand total of, if you added up all the time, maybe 3 to 4 days of sun. And there, you know, there were little moments of glorious sun, but very, very few and far between.
Wow.
Yeah, which is very, it's off. It's certainly off for that region for that time of year. And it had been raining for several weeks before we got there. And it was, I mean, I got a report from the boat just a couple of days ago, and it was still raining. I think it's cleared up a little bit now, but, you know, basically they've had constant rain, which, you know, we were in the water, so we could still photograph, but obviously it affected everything in the water.
Yeah.
The currents were running the opposite direction of what they would normally be doing. It seems like the water temperature was a little bit higher than it should have been, at least in the weeks leading up to when we went there. So the result of this was that there were basically no critters. Like this is Milne Bay, which is, you know, critter capital, and we found in a month I saw 3 nudibranchs. There
you
were more,
mean, that
but not
little?
That much. More.
Like you.
Yeah, like it would have been like going to, I mean, not that many people go to Milne Bay these days, but you know, if you went to, you know, Lembe and said you saw 3 nudibranchs in 1 month, that's about how different it was from normal.
Yeah,
and you know, I heard that from other people around diving in different areas too. So I think it's a region wide thing. Probably, I'm guessing it's the tail end of this La Nina phenomenon, because the water levels or the freshwater levels were so much higher, and obviously the visibility wasn't as good as it should be.
Yeah.
But as a result of that, there were some amazing congregations of fish, particularly under the wharf there at Samurai.
Okay.
So I put up a short video. I basically, there were a couple of days without very good light, but good enough to take video. So I took some video and just put up a 60-second short just to see how many fish, you know, show how many fish there were. Tons and tons of fish. I mean, literally tens of thousands of fish. It was
really
amazing. Yeah, which normally would not have been there. I mean, there are usually fish there, but not in those big numbers. And there were several different types. You know, all silvery kind of open water fish, but in big schools. So that was pretty impressive. You know, so I guess it's like everything else in nature. You know, there may be some things that are missing, but then something else is in its place. So despite the weather, we saw tons of stuff and great photography and a lot of fun too. So I did put up a lot. It's now buried because I've been trying to, I've had a backlog of stuff to put up.
Yeah.
Online, and I've been trying to put it up online before I head out to Tonga this weekend.
Oh, gosh, you're leaving for Tonga already, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so once I get there, I'll be concentrating on the whales completely, and I just didn't want to have stuff left over. Like,
sure.
I just put up...
I can go back and find some of it, and I'm sure everybody else can, too. I, you know, obviously, I was out and about a lot the last month, so I've not been online that much myself, so...
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's all up there, and I just put up this... a pretty long write-up about the trip that I took in February to Palau, which was, I couldn't really say anything about it until now, but if you do get a chance, I think that's a very interesting trip, because we explored Palau by kayak instead of, you know, normally going out by day boats.
Uh-huh.
And we went to, most of the places we went, tourists just would never see, because you just zip by them on a speedboat.
Sure.
And the people who do go to those places, you know, tourists who are going there for, like, say, kayaking or just, you know, little day picnics and stuff like that, are probably not the profile of tourists who will be going and looking at the nature stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not going to be carrying the big cameras and spending hours staring at an animal or a plant. So it was pretty unique and a very interesting experience.
So was there diving involved with that as well, or you kayaking?
So I had never kayaked before, and we lugged everything. I mean, mass snorkel fins, scuba tanks, cameras, the whole works. We had a support boat that carried like the food and tents between beaches and stuff for us, but everything else during the day we had ourselves, so we were pretty loaded down.
So you actually stayed in a tent?
Yeah, we camped out the whole, it was an 8-day, 8 nights out on in the islands, basically. Oh, the Rock Islands. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
So now you've got enough skill to staying in a tent that you're ready to come up to go backpacking in the Arctic with Steve or I.
No. No, it was warm in Palau. And nice and warm. Although, actually, it was very unseasonably rainy as well. We had, there were a couple of nights where there was lightning and thunder. Uh-huh. So our guide, said he's been there for like 15 years or something like that. And he's never seen lightning there.
Oh, right? Really?
And so we had lightning strike ground next to our camp a couple nights, a few times. Which, actually, I thought was really cool. And now that I stop and think about it, it was kind of, probably kind of dangerous, but yeah.
I had a friend get killed in college down when I was living in Arizona because of a lightning strike.
Yeah, I mean it's not, you know, it is dangerous, but when we were there, and you know, you get woken up in the middle of the night by this lightning strike and you feel it go through your whole body. It was pretty cool.
Wow, that's an experience.
Yeah, and it leaves that, you know, that crisp ozone kind of feeling in the air. Which, so we did have a lot of fun. But those were probably the highlights over the past few months. So, yeah, so getting ready to head to Tonga and be there until beginning of October.
Wow, you're going to be gone a little over 2 months, huh?
Yeah, it's going to be a long season.
That sounds like it.
Yeah, so all the reports I'm getting from Tonga suggest that the whales have arrived early this year, which is interesting because they arrived late last year.
And this might have to do with the La Nina again.
That would be a guess, probably a logical guess, but who knows?
We're having nothing of a summer in Washington here in the Northwest. I mean, this is like the worst summer that we've ever had. I've lived here for 16 years now, so.
You mean less sunshine than you normally do?
Yeah, I mean, when certainly July and August, if it's ever going to be 80 or 90 degrees, this is the time of year to do it. Right. And, you know, we had 80 degrees for a few hours on Sunday afternoon, and that was the first time it's been that. And then it went back to, like, 60 degrees and raining on Monday. So, big difference, you know, but at least we weren't used to the sun. So.
Yeah, it's not like you get a lot there anyways.
No, which is why in my, forward thinking months ago, I signed up to go on a Bahamas wild dolphin trip next week.
Right.
So right. I'm leaving on Saturday morning to fly to Palm Beach and then going out with, it's Scott at Dolphin Dream?
Yep.
Is that right? Yeah. So I'm going to be out with him all next week and a group of people photographing the wild dolphins out there in the Bahamas.
Cool. Is that your first time?
That will be my first time. So I'm looking forward to that. So.
Yeah, you'll have a lot of fun.
Yeah. And then I'll be back home for about 2 weeks, and then I'm going back up to Alaska to use my boat for 3 weeks. A friend of ours, Paul Souders, and I are going to take my boat on the ferry from Homer to Kodiak. And then from Kodiak, it's about 35 miles across Shelikof Strait to the outer coast of Katmai. And we're going to spend about 2-3 weeks trying to photograph brown bears up very, very close. And then I come back home after that trip for barely 2 weeks, and then I'm going back up to the Arctic for the first time with Steve Kozlowski, co-leading the polar bear photo tour that we're doing in late September.
Right.
And we've still got some spaces available in that if anybody's interested, but I'm really looking forward to going up there with Steve. This is going to be a real interesting and beautiful, amazing opportunity. So.
Excellent. So, yeah, I guess we're both going to be traveling until October. End of September. Yeah, October, basically. So, okay, well, I guess we'll regroup then and see how things are going, if we can get Steve or Paul or somebody else on the line.
Absolutely. And, as far as our humpback whale trip goes for 2012, I know we've got a pretty good group of people that are ready to commit to that, and a little bit of a wait list. But still, if anybody's interested, you know, send us an email and we'll add you to the wait list and see what happens.
Yep. Yep. That's great. Okay. Well, I'll send you updates from Tonga as I'm there, see how the season's progressing. And coincidentally, after John and I sign off, we're going to run a very short interview that we just did with Flip Nicklin, who is publishing a new book, or has published a new book called Among Giants. He is one of the, I guess, one of the premier photographers, underwater photographers of cetaceans, somebody that I've known since I was a kid. And in fact, seeing his pictures inspired me to get started. So keep listening for an interview with Flip and to learn about some of his experiences and about his book.
And, you know, we should also throw in a little bit of thank you to some of our sponsors, probably pretty quick, Tony. I just have a couple of people that I'd like to thank that I've actually just started working with probably since the last time that we did one of these podcasts a couple months ago. Mm-hmm. I started working with Aquatech Underwater Housings.
Right.
So I'm going to be taking one of their housings from my Canon 5D Mark II to the Bahamas with me. And, you know, I've already been working with Aikolite for a few years, but I just thought that I should try something different and maybe a little bit more secure way of attaching that dome port than the way the Aikolite is for not just the dolphins that I'm going to photograph next week, but also some of the things I'm hoping to do with the brown bears in Alaska next month with the brown bears fishing in the rivers with the salmon and stuff. So,
okay. It'll be interesting to hear what you think after you get back.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. No, yeah. That's all I have.
Okay. Yeah. I've been kind of, I don't know if you've noticed, but at the bottom of my posts now, if I've used or discussed gear that I've either received for testing or have been sponsored by, I kind of put that out there now.
Okay.
Just to be clear. You know, I don't write about anything if I don't like it, but you know, just to be clear what I've been receiving and what I haven't been receiving. So there's absolutely no doubt. Which, you know, I figured it's probably a good practice.
Sure. And then you make the links real accessible for everybody who might be interested. Yeah. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Well, thanks, Tony. And I'll let you go over and finish this interview with Flip.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks then, Tony.